Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and this is a special session of the Manager as Coach Boot Camp, and today is August 13th, 2008. Our special guest today is Greg Lavoie, who is the author of a book entitled Callings, Finding and Following an Authentic Life. Greg is a full-time lecturer and seminar leader in the who works in the business, educational, and human potential arenas. He has keynoted at state, national, and international conferences of the National Career Development Association, the American Counseling Association, the International Association of Career Management Professionals, and has presented workshops at the Smithsonian Institution, Microsoft, American Express, BP, Amoco, the Environmental Protection Agency, the School for Managing and Leading Change, and others. He has also been a frequent guest of the media, including ABC TV, CNN, NPR, and PBS. Greg is a former adjunct professor of journalism at the University of New Mexico and a former columnist and reporter for the Cincinnati Enquirer and USA Today. He has written about the subject of callings for the New York Times Magazine, Washington Post, Omni, Psychology Today, Reader's Digest, and many others. And Greg's book, Callings, is used as a text in various graduate programs in management and organizational leadership. Greg, I want to welcome you to the call.
Thank you so much.
Well, I want to help our listeners understand, get kind of a foundation about what you mean by callings. And maybe we can start with the word calling and mission and purpose or life purpose and vision. How are all of these connected, or are they the same?
Well, you've cut me to the quick. There's some subtleties among them all. Well, let me just start with callings, because I'm just simply defining that term very pluralistically, if not secularly, to mean those messages, those urgings, even those imperatives that we each get from deep inside our own life that essentially tells us what it's going to take to stay true to true north. All right?
Okay.
So this is not the burning bush scenario, the chariot streaking across the sky, the finger of God. Sometimes they come in that form, but for most people, not often. So these are the intuitions, the passions, the dreams, the body symptoms, the way books mysteriously make their way onto your night table. It's these kinds of signs and signals that indicate to us what it'll take to make our own life literally come true. So that's sort of first and foremost. And, you know, just in terms of addressing this particular group, you had mentioned that what you do in the Teach Me Teamwork is using coaching methods in the service of leadership. And I just wanted to say my own sense of the place where callings meets this particular kind of work that you're doing is my sense that leadership is largely, it seems to me, about understanding and activating the deep motivations in other people.
Absolutely.
Their callings, you know, their sense of mission and passion, what they want to contribute to the world. And frankly, I think that people who operate from these kind of motivations work with a tremendous amount of enthusiasm and actually don't need a whole lot of managing. That's my sense of it. But to get at these kind of deep drives in people and unleash the power of them requires, as I'm sure anybody who's applied the coaching methods this way can attest to, it requires a certain amount of courageous self-reflection. And I think this is ideally modeled by leaders and managers and coaches. You know, in other words, people who have a sense of their own passions and purposes, knowing what they're here to do, what they stand for.
Have you met, in your travels, and when you meet leaders, how often is it that you meet a leader who is not in touch with their calling?
Well, let me see. That's a good question.
Well, this is a leading question. Is it possible to be a highly effective leader, in your estimation, without the answering your calling?
Not as effective as you could be. Mm-hmm. My sense is that knowing yourself is as crucial to good leadership and good stewardship as knowing your clients, knowing your craft. That's my sense.
Yeah.
So I just think that having a working familiarity with your own call to leadership, just the call to leadership, and where it is, what it is calling for from you right now, mm-hmm. in terms of next steps and course corrections and whatnot, I think that is the degree to which you can then inspire other people to contribute, to be engaged, to be impassioned about their work. You know, one of the things I'm a student of is myths and fairy tales. And there's something very interesting. There's a certain body of myths in the world. The Sleeping Beauty is a great example. The Grail King, great example. And these myths teach that when the king sleeps, the kingdom sleeps. When the queen sleeps, the kingdom goes dormant. And those around them also sleep. But when the king and the queen wake up in these stories, the kingdom wakes up. Those around them also wake up, and the kingdom starts to flower. And I just think that's a very powerful commentary on what happens when leaders are either awake or asleep to their own sense of deep integrity. And I don't mean integrity. I don't mean it as a moral issue. I mean it as a psychological issue.
Mm. And again, working on the foundation before we, because I know there's some people on the call who have read your book or are reading your book, and at my encouragement, and have questions for you. And I want to provide a bit of a foundation before we take some questions. But mm-hmm. in the subtitle of your book, Finding and Following an Authentic Life, why authentic?
What does that mean?
Well,
my sense of what an authentic life means is the life that truly belongs to you and isn't a knockoff. One that really puts you in line with your deepest passions, your deepest enthusiasms, who you know yourself to be at the deepest core, what's truest for you. To the degree this even matters to anybody who's on the line here, the word enthusiasm is a spectacular word. For anybody who has a spiritual or a religious life, because the word enthusiasm, entheos, means the God within. So by following your deepest enthusiasms in life, you are, by definition, you are following God. You know? And I just think that, again, to the degree that people are interested in having a life that is really in line with their deepest values, authenticity is simply the work of creating the match between who you are and what you do.
Very good. There is a, as we get into this finding your callings, I'd like you to share some, what are the steps that we can use to begin to go down this path? And you lay this out well in your book. And as you, before we go there, can you help our listeners? And by the way, I think because our muting isn't working exactly properly today, I'm going to ask all of our other the folks who are on the line to hit *6 to mute yourself so we can have a really good quiet call. There we go. Thank you. So, Greg, what are the symptoms when you're not following your calling? And then conversely, what are the I was going to say symptoms. What are the indicators of somebody who is?
Oh, that's interesting. I think some of the indications that people are not following calls is that work becomes a four-letter word. Mm. You know, they're not in line with it. They don't want to be there. They want to be somewhere else. There's a whole constellation of behaviors, for instance, that I think are signs that somebody doesn't like their work. And I've gone through these myself when I worked at one of the newspapers, and I was staying there a bit past harvest time. You know, coming into work late, leaving work early, constant clock watching, talking to friends in Hawaii on company time, indiscriminate wastes of supplies, sick days you come back from with a tan. You know, there's just a whole universe of behaviors that we engage in that say, I don't like my work. And I think it really pays to pay attention to them. You know, there's a famous old saying among the ancient Romans, the fates lead those who will. Those who won't, they drag. You know? And
well,
so...
And related to this, it seems like you're saying work becomes a four-letter word, but I know from your work that there's a relationship to challenge.
In what sense?
So if you're not, a symptom of not following your calling is that you're experiencing challenges. But if you're following your calling, there's also, it's not that challenges disappear.
Yeah.
It's just a different way of how you're experiencing those.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there are probably challenges either way. Whether you're doing what you love or not, I just think if you're going to suffer the challenges one way or another, you might as well suffer them in the service of doing what you love rather than what you don't.
Right.
But I think there's a feeling of being out of whack with yourself, a feeling of frustration at other people's adventures and risk-taking and growth. I think so. These are some of the indications. Dreams. I mean, I'm really into encouraging people to look at the dreams, to look at what their bodies are telling them. The American Medical Association came out with this about 10 years ago, that the majority of heart attacks occur around 9 o'clock on Monday morning.
Right.
Which undoubtedly has something to do with what most people are doing around 9 o'clock on Monday morning.
Right.
So the body can be very articulate in terms of how we actually feel. In fact, I sometimes encourage people to do this little exercise, which I learned from a coach named Kathy Walker. She has a process called Lights On, Clarity Process. And what you do is you videotape yourself talking about several of the directions you feel pushed or pulled in at the moment in your, say, your career. Stay where you are, move to another firm, change departments, change leadership style, quit altogether and go to India, whatever. And what you do is you videotape yourself being interviewed on camera for a half an hour by a friend or a colleague about door number one, door number two, and door number three. What do you like about this option? What do you hate about it? What scares you? What comes up when you think of, what are your colleagues going to say? What's your partner going to, just anything you can think of to be interviewed on about the various things that are calling to you. And then what you do is you get a bunch of friends or colleagues together on a Friday night and you make them dinner and you watch the video together and let them give you feedback on what they see, because you'll see it in parts per million, the changes of expression, the changes of gesture and posture, the energy, the light coming out of your eyes, the light going out of your eyes when you're talking. And it's just a way to get a visual aid on what the body thinks of your various calls. So I just think it's important to turn the receivers on and start being willing to receive information about what is actually calling to you and what's not.
So maybe we should head down that path now. What is a way the videotaping piece sounds like an amazing process,
yeah.
Because it's sort of in your face, it's literally.
Yeah.
And yet, I'm sure that there are other ways that you have seen to help people become aware. It seems like a lot of this is becoming aware of what's going on, what we're feeling. And I guess conversely, that we can get to the place of completely ignoring our calling by becoming completely numb.
That's true. Yeah, this is not about numbing. Yeah, my first suggestion generally to people is just simply to strike up a conversation with themselves. There's lots of tools that people use to do that. Journaling is a very common one. Starting up a personal board of advisors. This is a group of people you call together from among your circle of acquaintances to help counsel you in making change. So it's a feedback mechanism. Mm-hmm. You bring them to your house. You you know, again, you make them dinner or at the very least expensive ice cream, and then you retire to your living room or your dining room table for a couple of hours. And their job is, they ask you questions, they give you feedback, and they give you homework. I know that Tom, you're big on the building accountability into the process.
Yes.
For people, and this is a great way to do it. You have this board of advisors give you homework assignments so that you're actually making process and getting feedback and getting people to ask you questions. So journaling, keeping a dream log by the bed, your participation in any kind of group whose members gather together for the primary purpose of awakening.
Mm-hmm.
This could be a men's group or a women's group or a 12-step group or a spiritual group. I mean, there's lots of tools, but I think that the point is, turn the receiver on. Start a dialogue, a self-reflective practice. One of the things I was really impressed by when I interviewed people for the book mm-hmm. was how many of them had a dialoguing practice with themselves.
What's an example of that?
Keeping a dream log by the bed.
Okay.
Doing daily journaling. Let's see.
And these are people who reported to you that they felt as though they were following their calling?
Yes.
Okay. And how did you, when you went out looking for these people, did you just start asking, you know, do you feel like you're following your calling?
Well, I asked everybody that I knew, who do you know who you feel feels like they're really following a calling? I want to talk to them. And one of the questions I asked was, how did you figure this out? How did you begin to find out where you were called and what you were called to? And most of them said, well, for one thing, I've got a regular self-reflective practice where I'm constantly talking to myself in a manner of speaking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to myself. So this, again, through journaling or dream dialogue or regular short retreats or regular intimate conversation, you know, a variety of ways. I'm talking out loud to myself to find out, what do I really feel? What's really important for me to do right here? What matters? What doesn't? Where do I feel engaged? Where do I feel disengaged? Where do I feel aliveness? Where do I feel deadness? And just beginning to ask these kinds of questions is, where is the life force coming through me, and where is it blocked?
So when you found people like that, was it hard to find them when you started asking, or did you find that people said, oh, I know somebody who's
there? Oh, no, not hard at all. And nor is it, of course, hard to find people who are not following calls.
Yeah.
I wanted to interview them, too, and they're also a dime a dozen.
Yeah. So in your experience, I find this fascinating, that you were easily able to find people who are on their path, following their mission, feel like their life is in the right direction.
Yes, there are definitely people out there. I would venture to guess that it's not the majority of people from my own research.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's the majority of people.
And thus, one of the reasons your work is so popular.
Well, I like to think so. It strikes a chord in people. Just the word callings itself just... Mm-hmm. It's so evocative to people. It says, it speaks to them in some way that they have a sense of what it is, they have a sense of when it's missing from their life, and they have a sense of what their life could be like if they were in line with it.
Right. I've got a bunch of questions to ask you, and I want to take this moment to open up for questions for Greg. Have we raised any issues for that you'd like to get clarity on thus far for Greg? Remember to hit your star 6 key so you can unmute yourself if you are muted. And if not, we'll keep going. when you start down this path of a self-exploration, Greg, are there false positives? In other words, you start to open up, I would, like a friend of mine started exactly what you're talking about in January, and just recently, a month ago, things opened up for him. He started getting clarity. So that's 6 months, right?
Yeah.
And I would imagine that somewhere, and I haven't talked to him about this, but that he would either get frustrated or begin to wonder if the things in his life, well, is this it? So you get confused because what seems like a long time is going by.
Right, and it can sometimes be difficult. This is, you know, what the spiritual communities refer to as the work of discernment. How do you figure out whether a call is true or false? You know, like the false positive you were talking about. How do you know when to make the leaps that you need to make? Mm-hmm. How do you even know the calling belongs to you and isn't a hand-me-down from somebody else? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, these are all the kind of questions that are important to ask. Mm-hmm.
And a hand-me-down might be something that your parents want
exactly.
to do. Right.
Precisely. Or something your parents, one of your parents, for instance, was unable to do in his or her life and passed on to you to remedy.
Right.
You know, I couldn't be the whatever that I wanted to be, mm-hmm. and I want you to compensate for it.
Right.
Or I tried to be an X and failed at it, and I don't want you to have the same problem if you have the same call, so I'm going to try to steer you in a different direction.
Right.
You know, these kind of that's what I mean by a hand-me-down drama. So I asked everybody that I interviewed, how do you know when X is the right decision to make?
Mm-hmm.
When it's time to leave, when you need to be moving in a different direction, when maybe you need to leave the industry altogether for something else,
mm-hmm.
Or even employment altogether for self-employment. The responses that they gave me were so consistent that I can pretty much list them. people said to me that they knew callings were true, for one thing, when they kept coming back.
And they an example of that? When keep coming back?
Well, you know, for instance, for me, there were years and years and years went by, and I kept feeling the call to be a freelance writer. In other words, self-employed as a writer rather than working for the newspapers.
And how did that calling show up for you? When you say it keeps repeating, how did it show up in your life?
It keeps coming up in my fantasies. It keeps coming up in the kind of books that I go to in the bookstore. It keeps coming up in my journal writing. It came up in the kind of conversations I had with people. It was just a recurring theme in my mind
for years
that I needed and wanted to be and fantasized about being self-employed.
And your response to that was what?
Avoidance.
Okay.
This is phase one of responding to a call, by the way.
Okay.
It really is. Oh, it is.
And you can justify that avoidance for any number of reasons.
Oh, the primary one for most people is money.
Okay.
Oh, I'm not leaving this cushy job with this regular paycheck and medical benefits. I mean, right. Never mind that the only reason you're using the medical benefits is your job is making you sick.
Oh, good point.
But, you justify it by the argument of security. And it's the classic drama in terms of people's relationship to calls is the struggle between passion and security.
When you say it's classic, what makes it a classic?
Well, that it's common.
Okay.
It's common and age old is when people write about or talk about or dramatize in books and plays and whatnot the whole idea of being true to oneself. This is one of the classic issues is, do I stay safe and secure or do I follow my heart and take a risk?
Mm.
That's what I mean by classic. It's just about universal. And,
so for all the people you interviewed, when they followed their heart, they expressed this the problems with security. They all said, I had to leave this, what I perceived as being secure.
Yes, and it doesn't necessarily need to be financial security. It could be the security of other people's opinions or their other people's respect. It could be the security of the house you live in, the community you live in. If you're called to move, as I was at one point, from the city to the country for the first time in my life,
mm-hmm.
There's many forms of security, other people's approval. But everybody spoke about it at some point, is what they had to sacrifice in order to say yes to the call. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, who was it? The guy who wrote Care of the Soul, Thomas More. Mm-hmm. He says, sacrifice is the shadow in the calling. Mm-hmm. The shadow in the calling, meaning it's eminently a part of the call. You've got to let go of something you want for something you want even more, which is your own power, your own passion, your deep sense of integrity and authenticity. You know, I had to let go of a regular paycheck for freedom, the free in freelancing.
But what about the real, how do you counsel people when they're faced with making that jump away from the secure following their heart, and which is, it seems inevitable what you're saying.
Yes.
And it's real, the paycheck is gone, the health benefits are gone, and now they're out there.
Yes. Well, I'm a big believer in preparation.
Okay.
I don't think I'm not generally I'm not of the sink or swim school of thought on this stuff. You know, the all or nothing approach. I think Mark Twain had it right. He said, "Habit is habit. It's not meant to be flung out the window. It's meant to be coaxed downstairs one step at a time." So I believe in the small steps approach. When I was going to quit my job, for instance, as an employed person to become self-employed, I committed to 1 year of my life every Thursday night to study the life I wanted to live.
Mm.
Every Thursday night, what I did is I went to the public library from 6 to 9 and studied freelance writing. I read books about it. I interviewed freelancers. I wrote stories. I queried editors. I'd spent an entire year, which actually turned out to be a year and three quarters, because in my informational interviews to prepare to follow the call, all the people who were doing what I wanted to do, which is who you really need to be talking to, people who are following the call you're interested in following, you do informational interviews with them, and they all told me, you better have 2 years' worth of savings in the bank. Which I didn't have at the time, and it made me extend my deadline. But a year and three quarters of Thursday nights gave me the running jump I needed to make the leap. And I had, at that point, contacts with editors. I had relationships up and running. I had a portfolio. I had confidence. And I leapt into work instead of into an abyss.
This is the piece about, it sounds like you really had patience as you move through this, as opposed to the sort of the leap in the net will appear type of
approach. Patience, I think, may possibly be one of the missing links in people's relationship to calls. Mm-hmm. They really need to give it the time, especially when it involves anything involving your career.
Mm-hmm.
And relationship calls and things like that, lifestyle calls. I really think patience is critical.
Let me ask you this question. I have a friend who had her undergraduate degree. I can't remember what, but she got it in her head that she wanted to be an elementary school counselor.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes back to school, earns her degree, does everything necessary to dot her I's, cross her T's, and then gets a job as an elementary school counselor. Greg, I'm not kidding you. She lasted 2 months.
Oh.
And she said, what was I thinking?
Oh.
And she did all of this work, spent all of this money, and what went on? I mean, I don't know the full story, but how does that happen?
Well, the first question I would ask is how much homework did she do to find out exactly what the day-to-day would be like in that kind of job? This is why I really stress the idea of conducting informational interviews with people who are doing what you want to do.
Which she did. She really didn't do. She had just had formulated in her mind what it was like. So,
right.
And yet she felt as though she would report that she's following a calling, that it felt to her like the right thing to do. So when someone tells you that, what you're going to say is, hey, you need to do your homework.
Well, another thing I might ask is, how do you know that the fact that you lasted 2 months here means it wasn't a true call? Mm-hmm. How do you know that what it's simply suggesting is you need to make a fine-tuning, or maybe it was the wrong school, or maybe you need a little bit more of something or a little less of something? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you jumped to conclusions that this wasn't something you should be doing, or maybe it suggests a tweak that needs to be made to make it right. In other words, that there was something about moving in that direction that was, in fact, calling to her,
right,
but it may not have actually been the specific job description that she ended up in.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been something deeper, like, I need to work with children,
mm,
or I need a less stressful environment than the corporate situation I'm in. Or, in other words, there was something about it that was calling to her, but it may not have been in this exact form that she ended up in there.
And this is, I think, what triggered that story for me is the patience piece that you talked about.
Yeah.
Is she was sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater and swinging from one thing to another, whereas
uh-huh,
it sounds like what your approach is more methodical.
I am. This is not to say that there aren't times when you got to take a flyer.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there are. If you're in a terribly toxic situation, the call may simply be, save yourself.
Right.
And with no more forethought than that. But, you know, I have to make a comment about, you know, you mentioned the leap and the net will appear scenario.
Yes.
I think there's a lot to be said for the manifestational arts in the sense that, you know, as you thinketh, that's what you'll create. And you know, if you leap with trust, the net will... The fact is, I have seen people leap and go splat. You know?
Right. And that scares the rest of us.
Yeah.
Because we're all watching them.
Exactly. I'm just saying that leap in the universe will just provide everything you need is not always the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
It is often that when you trust your deepest self and you make the changes you need to make, that the world reaches out in unexpected ways to help out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about this net scenario. I would be afraid of setting people up for a fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With that idea. There's another reason I go Boy Scout on this stuff, is be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Really scope it out and give it 6 months or a year to really explore what the dimensions of this call are for yourself.
So let's take a moment here. Have we raised any questions for folks who are listening? Anybody would like to ask a question of Greg? You might have to hit your star 6 key. Looks like there's a couple people already unmuted. I know there's some people out there who are listening who are going through some changes and are trying to figure this out right now. So if you do have a question, just go ahead and jump in. Otherwise, we're going to keep going. Is there anybody out there with a question? Yes, who's this?
Corliss.
Hey, Corliss.
I just wanted to ask, I'm at the part in the book about the timing sometimes of a calling, because I've had this calling in the past to start my own business, and when I've done it, I've gotten so lonely working alone, and it just hasn't worked for me, and then I'll end up taking a job, and it's this repeat pattern of going in a company and working so hard for a year and then getting laid off three times.
Oh.
So this last time, it really occurred to me, like, look at what's going on here, you know? And once I decided, you know, I do get lonely when I work by myself, I was able to find a company that offers the support and services and a network of people that I needed to do this work that I want to do.
Uh-huh.
And now it seems to be the right time. And now I've got the enthusiasm, and it feels right, where in the past it was just sort of a default sort of thing to do.
Uh-huh. So the difference this time is that you're connecting with other people to do it?
Well, not connecting with other people in that sense. There's a group I'm going to join where I have other people as resources, and we would meet every quarter, and where, you know, this company is providing the materials for me. And that was another thing, is, gosh, I've got to create everything myself. And so it's very different this time, and now it feels like this is the right time, and I'm so excited I can hardly stand myself.
That's wonderful. That's music to my ears. So what are you doing to deal with the potential of loneliness again?
Well, I have 600 other people that I plan to go to the quarterly meetings and to talk to them in between. So it's not just me being the Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
I have other people. And I could even call on some people to do some of the training sessions that maybe they're more of an expert in that area than I am.
Oh, that's
so I don't
great.
Feel like I have to do it all myself.
That's wonderful. Will the quarterly meetings suffice for the aloneness factor?
We'll see. It feels like, maybe I just need to know they're there if I need them.
Uh-huh.
Where before, I tried having a partner once, and that didn't work out, and it may just, knowing that they're there.
Yeah.
And busting through my fear this time and not looking at the past and going, well, look what happened in the past when you did this.
Right. That's wonderful. Good for you.
Just convince myself this is different, this is the right time, and this is what I need to do. I've got to do it.
Yes. That's great. Well, I wish you great good luck in making the leap.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have to say, when I quit my job as well, one of the things I underestimated was the lonesomeness factor. And
yeah.
I didn't realize how much I was going to miss the water cooler scene. Just having colleagues, having somebody in the next cubicle, and I didn't do this myself, but somebody suggested it to me that you can set yourself up in an office where there are other people, like in some kind of a warehouse situation where there are other people doing their own businesses down the hall, and across the hall, so that there are people around. And yeah, I didn't want to spend the money to do that at the time, but it does seem like a viable option.
Yeah, that's a great thought. Yeah,
there's
plenty of
up. More and more, even here in the city I live in, Asheville, North Carolina, there's a couple places that have already popped up doing just that because there are so many people who are miss that human connection but want to work for themselves.
Ah.
So, thank you, Corey.
All right.
That's great. Thanks.
Who else has got a question? Anybody else with a question?
Thomas, Julius.
Yes, Julius, go ahead.
Greg, when you were making the transition, there's this concept of having a safety net, it's more than the research that you're talking about. It's even initiating things while holding on to your other job. Do you want to talk about your experience with that, if you tried to do that, and if
yeah.
It worked?
Yeah, I did. When I was working at the Cincinnati Enquirer as a reporter, and what I did for that year and three quarters that I mentioned was that I was essentially freelancing on the side. Now, a job is by definition work, and you're tired when you're done. And to get yourself to do moonlighting on top of that is an acquired taste, but I just kept falling back to that sense of passion, enthusiasm, and frankly, desperation that I had to get myself to continue to do those Thursday night things. But what I did is for almost 2 years, I was freelancing in the evenings. And it's only 3 hours once a week, but the cumulative effect of, a year or two worth of 3 hours a week is actually a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing, I don't mean to suggest there's anything mystical or sacrosanct about Thursday nights, it just happened to work into my schedule. But I was doing a certain amount of moonlighting once a week. But I also built in some, for instance, my first order of business when I knocked off of work at 5 o'clock on Thursdays was not to take the bus back uptown. I stayed downtown and I took myself out to dinner. And I mean dinner at a restaurant with tablecloths. because I wanted it to be part of an incentive for me and a reward system. So then I went to the library from 6 to 9. But I got into a rhythm of those Thursday nights where I actually really looked forward to them, to making progress. I kept a progress log during that period of time, which was essentially a like captain's log, stardate 1984, and all I was doing was chronicling the progress that I was making toward this goal, because it's very easy to forget that you're getting anywhere. And it's very easy to feel like the goal is constantly receding from you. It's like heading toward the horizon line. You know, you never actually get any closer to it. So the progress log was daily to-do lists. It was informational interviews. It was dreams. Sometimes there were drawings and doodlings. There were book reviews. I mean, just anything that went toward the fruition of this goal went into that log, and it had two goals. One, on those days when it all came crashing down on me, which it did with sometimes nauseating regularity, and I felt like I wasn't making any progress, I would open that log and flip through it and see that I was making tremendous progress, because every day I kept a little to-do list of three to five little tiny things that I could do to make this come true, not just Thursday nights, but every day I had a special little to-do list of little things like calling somebody up to talk about it, getting a magazine, reading an article, buying a book, going to a lecture, little stuff that you can knock off without too much difficulty. And after doing that for even 1 year, you are literally talking about thousands of individual steps.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sense of momentum is palpable. It's real. And the other reason I kept the log was that the logic of the progress log was simply that sometimes half of success is simply noticing it. Just noticing it, making note that I'm making progress. And it really kept the wheels turning for myself so that I didn't slack off. And the sooner you're able to get the experience of achievement toward the goal, accomplishment, the more likely you are to keep going, rather than making all the goals and all the goodies long-term and all the problems and all the obstacles short-term. You're giving yourself, by the to-do list alone, you're giving yourself the experience of achievement on a daily basis.
Right.
Make or break difference, in my opinion.
Great question, Julius. Thank you.
Yeah, great question.
Who else has got a question? Just jump in. I have one if we don't have one from our listeners here. All right. Greg, there's in answering Julius's question, one of the things that came up for me was that at that point you were already clear what was really driving you. How long can it take? I mean, when someone comes to you and says, "Hey, Greg, I don't even know where to begin. You know, I don't even know what my calling is. I'm totally confused."
Yeah.
How long can it take from, you know, like you said, all right, I'm going to start paying attention to my dreams. I'm going to start, you know, join a men's group. I'm going to start hanging out with people who are moving in the same direction.
Mm.
Have you found that people were reporting, "Oh, well, you know, after you do this for a month, bam,
you got it"?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, I suppose they're the lucky ones. I must confess I didn't interview any of those.
Okay.
Maybe it's because I couldn't find any.
Uh-oh.
No, because most of the time I was interviewing people about career calls. And I want to stress, it's not the only kind. There are relationship calls, there are service calls, all different kinds. But when we're talking about career calls, these are some of the bigger changes a person's likely to make in the course of their life. And I mean, what people's experience is that it takes time, first of all, sometimes it just takes years just to get yourself to even begin the conversation with yourself.
You said it can take years.
Just to start talking out loud about it.
Yeah.
You know, because you're at some level, at some intuitive level, you know what you're up against. You know what's going to hit the propeller
mm-hmm.
when you start moving toward it or even just articulating it. So sometimes for people it can take years to just fess up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm unhappy here. I've felt for a long time that I should be doing why when now I'm doing X. You know, sometimes it takes years just to fess up to there's something calling to you that means it's going to be a change in the status quo and, by definition, going to rock the boat. And then once you start having these conversations, it can take years to clarify. It can also take just months. You know, sometimes it's been there all along. It's really close to the surface. Once you turn the receiver on, you'll just be flooded with the information. And but I think that the task of turning the no into a yes can be quite lengthy for people. But it's amazing. Go ahead.
To get there faster, it's one of the things for me that helped, and it's I still miss it, which is TV. We got rid of our TV.
Ah.
And I confess now when I go to a hotel, man, you ought to see me with the remote. I'm just like, I can't stay on anything for longer than 20 seconds.
Stuff
I'm missing. On the other hand, it created an opening. So it seems like that in this process of saying or becoming open, in my experience, there was also a saying no to other things so that you can create space, like TV and some of the other things that people do to sedate themselves.
Right, exactly. That's a good term to use, too, or distract themselves.
Distract. Yeah.
Right. I just think, you know, I hate to say this, but this probably sounds familiar to people, and it's certainly familiar to me. Most people won't make significant change in their life until they're desperate or until their circumstances create so much suffering for them that it sort of forces their hand, and they've got to make some of these changes and reprioritizing and reshuffling their life. But it has seemed to me over the years that most people won't follow a call until the fear of following it is finally exceeded by the pain of not following it.
Mm-hmm.
And then people will often act with great commitment and courage and expediency. But I don't know. I guess there's something to be said for really acknowledging how unhappy or desperate you might be where you are and really letting that wash over you and, you know, having a good cry about it or a good shout about it or something.
Right.
But to really touch both the desperation or the unhappiness, and really what's behind it is the passion and the enthusiasm to live as you feel you're meant to live, that's all right there, right beneath all the fear, is the excitement, the life force, the sense of mission. And it's just to be able to touch that, to even just be able to say it out loud sometimes, is hugely empowering.
I know we're getting close to the top of the hour, and I want to honor that and want to make sure that if there's any other questions from our listeners here, have we raised any issues for you you'd like to get clarity on? Might have to hit your *6 key. Okay. We must be being very thorough, Greg.
Well,
I guess one last question is what happens in taking this step if at the beginning of our conversation we talked about the fear and the security piece? It seems like it's one level when it's just me. You know, there's no kids or marriage or, you know, any other significant. But for me, it got really scary when, you know, it was myself and my wife and then our new son. Right, and then I had this whole new level of the security piece.
Yep.
I thought, you know, I'm willing to risk me, but am I willing to risk, you know, the life of this child? You
sure.
know, my responsibility.
Right.
What do you do, or how do you counsel people when that comes in?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, 'cause that really brings some of the challenging human work into it. Well, first of all, the family, if you want to use that example, that is a calling. I'm not big on chucking one calling for another, abandoning, you know, responsibilities just to have a fling. So I think there's a, you know, callings are negotiable. This is not a subpoena. You know, they're negotiable, and you know.
By negotiable, do you mean that I can choose not to do it?
Yeah, you can choose not to.
And won't I feel a sense of unease?
Yes, you will. You can do it on the side. You can postpone it. You can share the burden with other people. I mean, there's lots of ways to negotiate with calls to bring them to fruition. Because really all calling ultimately is, I think it comes down to this, all it is a request for a response. It's like a phone call. It's just it's a request for you to respond one way or another. You know, you can pick it up, you can ignore it, you can put it on the answering machine. It's just a call to respond. And even a small response is still saying yes to the call. That doesn't mean you have to turn your life upside down and change everything, quit your job, you know, whatever. But you have to say yes to it, I believe, to some degree, because they don't go away. I mean, you talked about uneasiness. That may be the least of it. There may be nightmares. There may be getting sick. There may be a sense of you're holding off your destiny or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that people can refuse calls with impunity. I believe there is a cost to be paid, both for saying yes and for saying no.
Mm-hmm.
But I interviewed a guy for the book who was a corporate executive. He ran a coffee company in Cincinnati for 25 years, and his call, his real call, he said, was painting. And what he did, but he said, I also had the call to have a family and own a home.
Like, do you mean house painting or painting?
No,
art.
Art.
Okay.
Yeah. And he said I had multiple, as many people do, multiple callings. I wanted a family and a home, and I wanted to pursue my art. So what he did is he decided to keep the job at the coffee company all those years, raise a family, own a home, and do the painting on the side. When the kids were grown, he finally started to really turn his sights over to the painting to the point that he's doing it full-time now.
Mm.
So that's what I mean. Calls are negotiable. And another thing is, I think it's important to realize that you alone are called, but you're not the only one who's affected by how you respond to the call. You know, in a very real sense, callings are community property. You know, if you were called, for instance, to leave Asheville and move to China to work for a corporation over there, that's going to affect the communities that you belong to, your family, your friends. If you own a business, it's going to affect your employees. You know what I'm saying? So I just think it's important to realize that calls, in a sense, are community property, and that the way you respond to them is going to affect other people, not just yourself. And that complicates it.
Right.
Definitely complicates it, and definitely tends to make people lean more toward the security end of the spectrum than the passion end when they have a wife and a child.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's interesting how we pulled that back around into the aspect of community, because when we started the conversation, we were talking about the impact a leader has on a group of people who
exactly.
Is following their calling, because I absolutely believe that more than anything, that what we can do as leaders is answer those calls, because it inevitably and can sometimes profoundly affect the people that we're engaged in at home, at work, wherever.
Oh, absolutely. You know, now I can bring it down to real nuts and bolts. I used to do presenting for an organization called TEC, TEC, the Executive Committee, support groups all around the world for executives of companies. And a lot of these, mostly guys, a lot of these guys were in family businesses. And they often, one guy said, I want to be a football coach. I want to leave the family business, but I've got all these employees. This has been a business that's been around for 100 years. If I leave to be a football coach, that company's going to die. And all those people who are relying on me and who have families to raise and all that. And he just went through so much torment, this poor guy, around this issue, and was hanging on to this job that he, at this point, he genuinely loathed for the sake of a lot of other people. Now, on one hand, you can say the man is tremendously responsible and he's compassionate, which he is. On the other hand, it's whose name is going to be on his headstone.
Right.
And so these are really hard decisions.
Well, Greg, it's already an hour has passed, and it's hard to believe. And just so we can make sure we get this on the recording, we've been talking with Greg Lavoie, who is the author of Callings, Finding and Following an Authentic Life. And, Greg, the best website address to get you or to find your work is what?
GregLavoie.com, GregLavoie.com.
And that address, if you've ended up with this MP3, you can find the link to that address right next to where you found this recording, GregLavoie.com. And, Greg, your books are available at Amazon and I would imagine all major booksellers.
Yes, most of them.
Yes. And I would encourage people to go to Amazon and read the reviews. They're how people are profoundly affected by a great book. It's fantastic. And I would encourage anyone listening to this recording, if you ever find yourself with an opportunity to see Greg live in person on stage leading a workshop, get yourself there and do that and bring a friend. Even if you think things are going just peachy keen, you're going to take a look at a deeper level. And Greg, I had the opportunity several years ago to participate in a workshop you led here in Asheville.
Oh, wonderful.
And I still have my notes from that, and look at them.
Great.
And that's what effect that has had. And your work has – one of the reasons we're talking today and I've got this big list of subscribers in 103 countries is partly because of the work that we did, that I did with you. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
Well, again, we've been talking with Greg Lavoie, author of Callings, Finding and Following an Authentic Life. This is Tom Heck with the Manager as Coach Bootcamp and – TeachMeTeamwork.com. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.